As fall approaches and leaves start to turn with the cooler nights, many species begin their ancient tradition of heading south for warmer climates.
Here in Wisconsin, at the end of summer, millions of monarch butterflies travel for thousands of miles from southern Canada and the Midwestern and Eastern parts of the U.S. to their overwintering grounds in Mexico.
To get an update on fall migration and how these pollinators are coping with climate challenges, we turn to Karen Oberhauser, co-founder of the Monarch Larva Monitoring Project and former director of the UW-Madison Arboretum. She's been researching monarch butterflies for the past 40 years. Karen, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kate. It's great to be here today.
Monarch butterflies are in this annual migration cycle. Where are they now in their fall migration?
Well, at this point, they're spread from the northern bounds of their breeding range, which is a little bit north of us. And the ones that left earliest are about to the middle of the country right now. And we can track this migration on great maps put out by a program called Journey North. So I actually just looked at those maps and I see some monarchs are showing up now in roosting sites way down in Kansas and even a little bit further south right now.
I can't imagine how exhausting this journey must be to Mexico. How do they survive it?
They have built up fat stores in their bodies as caterpillars. So it's really important. Their nutrition is caterpillars. And what they eat in their milkweed plants, they use to grow and develop, but they also store fat. They produce fat that they store in their bodies as caterpillars. And then as they're migrating, they're drinking a lot of nectar. So they're actually a little bit heavier when they arrive in the southern part of the United States than they were when they were leaving up here. So they're getting a lot of nutrition along the way. And that's because they need to build up enough fat to keep them alive during the winter time when they can't eat very much. But another thing that they do is they fly really smartly. If you watch a monarch migrating, they spend most of their time soaring instead of using powered flight. So if you think of powered flight as like a bird flapping its wings really hard, and soaring is when they're just moving through the air without flapping their wings, which uses a lot less energy. So these monarchs, as they're migrating south, are taking advantage of air currents and just soaring as much as they can during this flight to save energy.
That is smart. And they nearly hit an all-time low in the 2023-2024 season, and that's according to the World Wildlife Fund data. What has happened to them?
Well, a lot of things are happening to monarchs. It's a lot of, like a lot of other species, they're suffering a lot of inputs that are causing their populations to get smaller. The biggest one for monarchs we know is habitat loss, mostly breeding habitat loss. So there just isn't as much habitat as available to them as there used to be. But they also are impacted by insecticide use, both agricultural insecticides and insecticides that people use in their yards to control insect pest populations. Most insecticides are broad spectrum, which means that they kill everything, not just the target insects. So there's habitat loss, there's pesticide use, and climate is another big factor. Because monarchs are cold-blooded, they're completely dependent on the weather. And if it's too hot and dry, it's not good for their milkweed plants, and the monarchs live shorter lives when it's hot. So the population is lower in a hot, dry summer. But on the other hand, if it's too cold and wet, they do well. So they're kind of like Goldilocks. They like it not too hot and not too cold, but just perfect in the middle.
Well, this summer has had such large amounts of rainfall compared to previous years. The U.S. Drought Monitor shows nearly our entire state is free of any forms of drought conditions. Is that a plus then for the monarchs?
Yes, this summer has been good for them, and it's not just Wisconsin. It's mostly through their entire breeding range. In fact, if you look at a drought map, I'm glad that you looked at one, Kate. You can see that there are very few spots in the whole United States that are under severe drought right now, unlike last year. So monarchs, it was interesting this year, when they first came back to Wisconsin in late May and early June, everybody was saying to me, we're just not seeing any monarchs. We're not seeing any butterflies. We're not seeing any insects at all. But then because we had a relatively benign June with plenty of rain and it didn't get too hot, the drought abated through the whole state, monarch numbers started going up. So we saw a lot more monarchs during the second and third generations in Wisconsin than we did in the first generation in Wisconsin. So that's one of the things we look for in a year, is how much the numbers increase from the beginning to the end of the summer. And this year was great. So I went from people calling me and saying, I'm not seeing any monarchs, to saying I'm seeing lots of monarchs. So that's a great sign.
That is a very good sign. We're talking about monarch butterflies with Karen Oberhauser, co-founder of the Monarch Larva Monitoring Project. That's a citizen science effort to count monarch caterpillars and eggs as part of a larger population tracking project. Karen, why is a close tracking of the monarch population and their migration, why is that so important?
I think from a conservation perspective, it's really important that we keep our finger on the pulse of the monarch population, because that allows us to see what conditions are good for them, what conditions are not so good, what kinds of habitat, are gardens good for them, where are monarchs found, where do they do the best, and under what weather conditions do they do the best. And we can only know that if we're tracking them over many years and over many different kinds of habitat. So it's important from a conservation perspective. And I think almost as importantly, or in some cases even more importantly, tracking monarchs builds connections between people and monarchs. So the people that are tracking them learn more about them, they become more concerned about them, and they do more to preserve their habitat and to teach other people to support monarchs however they can. So it has a lot of benefits, both sort of societal and from a conservation perspective.
How much impact might butterfly gardens or native plantings have on monarch survival?
That's a great question. And because we know that the decline in monarch numbers is driven by habitat loss, and we also know that monarchs can use very small habitats. It's not like a wolf or something that needs huge areas of land in order to live and survive. But monarchs really can come into somebody's garden that might only have a few flowers and 10 milkweed plants and lay eggs on those milkweed plants, and the eggs can develop up into adult butterflies. So adding as much habitat as we can in any kind of space will benefit monarchs. Of course, the amount of habitat, you know, if you had a choice between a tiny garden and a huge area, it would be better to do the huge area as a monarch habitat, but the tiny garden can still make a difference. And if we have lots and lots of tiny gardens, it can add up to a huge habitat.
You've built your life and research around monarchs. I wonder what makes them so special to you?
I think they're just fascinating organisms. I first started studying them because I was really interested in their reproductive behavior. So I studied monarch sex before I started studying monarch conservation. And then I started going to Mexico and studying them there. And as I got my PhD and became a professor, I had graduate students who worked on many different aspects of monarch biology. So I think what got me started was just they're so fascinating, just every aspect of their biology, from their relationships to their predators and parasites, to the way they use habitat, to the incredible migration that they undertake every year. And I'll have to say it, to their really interesting sex lives. But I think that they have, that, you know, they just have this fascination. And I think from why other people are drawn to monarchs is their beauty. People really like monarchs because they're so beautiful, even when they're caterpillars. Most people would think they're kind of pretty. They're impressive. They have this migration that is kind of unbelievable, that something that weighs as much as a paperclip can fly thousands of miles to Mexico. So I think that, you know, there are just all of these things, but really what drew me in was the science of them.
Karen, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Karen Oberhauser is the former director of UW-Madison's Arboretum and co-founder of the Monarch Larva Monitoring Project, a citizen science project to track monarch eggs, larvae, and milkweed throughout North America. We've been talking about the monarch butterfly population and the fall migration season that's underway.